top 10 riskiest scams of 2017 from a new BBB report. The 2017 Scam Risk Index. Lots of change. Our special guest, Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director for the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut.
And Brad, he's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, spends Tuesday, the second Tuesday of every month with us at this time. Howard, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. And by the way, the guest chair always feels wonderful. I don't know where you get your furniture.
Well, it's not by way of a scam, I can tell you this, but boy, these 10 riskiest scams, this is incredible.
Unreal.
How about telling us about this?
All right. Well, this is, as Brad, you mentioned, it's called the Scam Risk Index. And we're not really ranking scams in terms of how prevalent they are, but we're measuring them by three criteria. And the criteria are exposure, which represents the likelihood that you'll be targeted, susceptibility, which represents the odds of you being targeted by swindlers and losing money, and monetary loss obviously takes into account financial losses as a result of fraud. Now, we spoke to 47,000, we didn't speak to them rather, 47,000 people went to BBB.org, and we have a program in there called Scam Tracker. If you have a problem with a company or an individual, you'd file a complaint. But when someone is trying to scam you outright, you don't know who it is. So people will go to that part of the site, put in the scam, so that folks in the neighborhood and across the country will know what's going on, who's being scammed and how. Well, we looked at those reports from the last year. From 2017, we compared it to the year before. And we found some interesting things before we actually get into the top list. Now, you remember the big tax collection scams that we heard about?
Right.
In
yes, yes.
Well, there's been a 60% decrease. That's 60% discrete. 60% decrease in the number of reports, and that's probably due to the arrest in India in 2016 of the ringleader of a network of call centers primarily responsible for the IRS scam.
In India.
Now, you're talking about one call center, one group, and they were the ones cranking out all of those calls we were getting.
Wow.
So that has dropped off. And I'll tell you, even last year towards the end, we still saw numbers of people reporting that, huge numbers of people saying someone called them, threatened they were from the IRS, they arrest them if they didn't send money. But the dollar losses were zero. The education worked. People knew it was a scam. They would just hang up the phone, and that was the end of it. But when we're looking at this, at the triad, if you will, of exposure, susceptibility, and monetary loss, we can go through the top 10 right now. Right now, the most risky type of scam in 2017 is online purchases. Number two is investment scams. Number three is employment scams, followed by advanced fee loan scams and fake checks. I'll go down the other five in a moment. What's interesting about online purchasing being the number one most risky type of scam in 2017 is, by and large, probably a reflection of the fact that we spend so much time buying on the Internet.
Right.
And we have at least one, and actually a second generation now, that is in love with all things Internet. And in the past, when somebody wanted to get information, let's say credit card information, they would call us up, which took a lot of people hours in terms of the way they saw it. But with the Internet, the victims are coming to them. We're going to the websites where we're getting fooled.
Wow.
And they're collecting the money like that. Now, the reason I wanted to hold on number six was because number six in this list is home improvement scams. Well, if you go back 2016, a year before this study was done, home improvement scams were the most dangerous ones.
Right, they sure were.
Well, that's dropped down to number six now, as has that fake tech support call, things like that, and the so-called grandparent scam. So the landscape has changed quite a bit, and I've been looking at what's gone up and what's gone down, and gentlemen, I cannot come up with any sort of understanding of why, for example, travel and vacation scams went from number 12 in 2016 to number 8, and why there was this big movement around.
Yeah.
All I can come up with is, as I said, the online purchases are up. Investment scams are number 2, which is interesting because Better Business Bureau has found in previous stories that the two most vulnerable groups are the elderly, certainly, as well as college-educated and college-aged individuals, because they have this bias index, this optimism bias that, hey, it's not going to happen to me. And they'll find themselves
an investment.
They'll figure out, a college student, I'm smart, and the monetary losses are very large for people in that age group.
Howard, I want to get to something that has always bothered me.
But before we do, Howard, we're going to get to the traffic, so hang in there just a second.
Okay, let's get to this one that has bothered me for a while. Teenagers and debit cards. When is the right time, Howard, for a teenager or college student to have a credit or debit card? When's the right time?
I suppose, well, to some extent, it would depend on the maturity of the teenager or college student. But we have to look at what are the things that push a credit card and a debit card now as being a necessity. And that is the Internet. You cannot use cash on the Internet. In the old days, I don't know about you folks, I used to get a couple of bucks allowance a week, and that was it.
Yeah.
But you have to use plastic for Internet transactions. And right now, the question is, well, when are they responsible enough? That's almost impossible to determine, but you've got to start somewhere. And they have tremendous spending power. But young people don't think about billing cycles and paying on time. So if we're asking about when is the best time, I would suppose it'd be a case of two things. One is necessity for college or for purchases online. But the other reason that we need it is to build a credit history. When we start out, we basically have a bad credit number, pardon me, because we've never had a line of credit if you're 15 or 16 years old. And unfortunately, there are some identity thieves who manage to get hold of social security numbers of infants. And they'll use them until they're teens.
Wow.
And you don't find out about it until you turn 16 and pull your credit report for the first time. So there are a couple of ways of telling when the necessity is there and how to deal with it. In terms of how to deal with it, which I think is important, you can go the debit card route. And the thinking is, with a debit card, you can only spend what's in the bank, the equivalent of putting that several dollars allowance in your pocket. What the teenager or college student has to appreciate, though, is there is a limit. Otherwise, they'll get hit with overdraft charges, those types of things. And we know a debit card is not as safe to use online as a credit card. But when we're talking about a credit card, we're now talking about the ability to max the card out, which ultimately may hurt their credit score. And it also puts them in that beginning of the cycle of debt, which will only build as they get older, and especially if they're in college right now. So parents have a few things to put on the table to think about how they deal with this with an adolescent or a teenager. And by the way, I have friends with kids as young as 13 and 14 who have their own cards.
Wow, that's too young, in my opinion.
13 and 14?
Wow.
14 years old.
Oh, please. Yeah. Please.
At 14 years old, I can barely tie my socks, my shoes off.
Well, Howard, while we have you here, because so many items to talk about, I want to get to smartphones and what we could be doing to make our smartphones even safer, because we think that our smartphones are invulnerable, that they're not like computers, but they could be open to a virus attack too. What can we do to make our smartphones safer?
Well, the first thing, Dan, is to put a password on it. We found out that 55% of people who have a smartphone in this country do not have a password protecting it.
Wow. They don't?
They do not.
Wow.
You ask those same people, do you have a password on your laptop or your computer at home? And they're going to tell you, yes, because it's dangerous. So that's number one. And we have to remember that a smartphone is not so much a phone that carries contacts as a computer
right.
that can make telephone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So to strengthen our security, first thing, you put that password on. The second thing is we put way too much personal information in there. And I was guilty as charged. I would put bank account numbers in the contacts. Some folks will put passwords in there. It's just not wise because it's so easy to penetrate them. If you don't want to put those things in there, there is software you can get that's free that will enable you to store your password.
What's a good free software?
Very good free software. It's called it's a type of password protection software, and it does not keep those passwords on your cell phones.
But could you give us a name?
I cannot endorse the company.
Okay. All right.
I can tell you off air what I use.
All right.
But if anybody Googles password protection software or password management software,
okay,
they'll find some good free and paid options.
All right. That's good.
Our smart devices are...
Are you looking for a new one, Dan?
Actually, don't mean to cut Howard off. I do not even, and I know those services are good that Howard is talking about. I store all my passwords. I'm not going to tell you how I store all my passwords. How's that? I'm not going to tell you.
Good.
As simple as that.
That's why I asked it, because I knew you wouldn't.
Yeah. Go ahead, Howard. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all right. I was going to say, we all know what your passwords are anyway. Well, I think the secret is to give as much attention to our smartphones as we do our personal computers. Let's start by buying a security suite. Honestly, gentlemen, I don't know anybody who's got antivirus protection or a firewall on their smartphones. And it's becoming more and more important because the cyber hackers are realizing we don't leave our laptops on that often. We don't take them out as much. And if we're at home on our PCs, it's small potatoes. But when you have people walking by the dozens or by the hundreds in shopping malls, hotels, airports, places where there are free Wi-Fi spots, now you're talking about a tremendous amount of opportunity for them. So they are working very, very hard to create viruses that will get into, in particular now, iPhones.
Yep.
It's a little more difficult with the Android system because people can pick up software from sites other than the Play Store and end up with viruses like that. But they're working very hard to get to us. So some of the things we can do to protect our cell phones or our smartphones, aside from password protecting it, is turn off the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth when you're not using them. We have to remember that these devices rely on radio waves, and radio waves can be intercepted. So when we're walking around the mall, we are being followed by a Wi-Fi system. When we go into a store, there are systems that know what shelf we're at, what we're looking at. If you turn off your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth when you're not using them, you're cutting your risks of being followed or being hacked by probably 50%. And this also would cover all those places, those wonderful places that offer us free Wi-Fi where you don't need a password. However, we do urge everybody who's going to use any sort of a smartphone or even a PC, laptop, when you go into a place that has free Wi-Fi that does not require a password, a coffee shop, a restaurant, ask them what the name of their network is. Because you can go into a coffee shop that says Joe's Beans Number
That's
One,
right.
and you can find another network called Joe's Beans mm-hmm. Primary. Well, if you click on one of those, it could be a fake network set up by somebody in the restaurant
yep.
or two doors over or in the parking lot. And we encourage you we discourage folks when they're using free Wi-Fi like that. Don't do any banking or commerce or put in any sort
Never.
Of passwords that you would want someone else to see.
Howard, we're running out of time. Just quickly, one more question here, and that is, believe it or not, spring is around the corner. You won't know it today, but what should people know as far as spring renovations, maintenance, some of the common problems they might be able to avoid?
Sure. Horror
quickly,
stories
quickly.
include contractors that take a deposit and disappear or start work and let a project drag on like a kitchen renovation for months with ignoring the completion date. So we've heard the stories. The best way to protect ourselves is to, number one, get at least 3 bids because you'll learn what sorts of materials are necessary, how many hours are necessary. You'll understand the project. And if one particular bid is lower than the others, you've got to ask yourself why. Number two, don't do business at the door. If somebody is soliciting your business for home renovation, they're not giving you the opportunity to do your research. If they say it's a today-only price, high-pressure tactic, ignore them. Get references from recent customers, because ownership changes, as do the workers. They're only as good as their last project. When you get a contract, it should have everything in writing, including start, stop date, materials, how long it'll take, and all verbal representations. The contract should specify the required permits. Now, if your contractor doesn't want to go down to City Hall to get the permits, it could very well be that they have a bad reputation in town. That should be in the contract. And the very last thing that we should do in terms of home renovations, aside from checking them out, you can do that at BBB.org, is avoid putting down a large deposit. A typical payment schedule should follow what we call the rule of thirds. The first payment is given when you sign the contract, and that helps lock in the time and help pay for the materials. The second payment when work begins, and the final payment when the job is finished and you're satisfied with the quality of work. Ask the builder to walk you through the work to explain what has been done.
Howard, great job as always. Thanks so much
for
spending some time with us. We'll talk again next month. You be well and be safe.
You folks too, and keep that chair nice and warm for me.
All right. Thanks, Howard.